Cy Montgomery had us at the first line of her new slim book, Inches from My Face, I Hold a Living Dinosaur. That would be the dinosaur's genetic descendant, a hawk, who then screams full force into her face, at least he doesn't bite it off, which he could. Cy Montgomery loves animals deeply. You've heard her before in the program. In previous books, she introduces us to pigs and hummingbirds. Her acclaim, The Soul of an Octopus, is a love story. Who can forget her description of the first time an octopus reaches an arm to hers, fastening on with suckers that felt like an alien kiss, she writes. It's the beginning of a mystical bond. But hawks? Not so much. On my hand, she writes, I hold a waterfall, an eclipse, a lightning storm. When an aloof hawk does deign to notice her at one point, she writes, it feels like a baptism. Cy Montgomery's new book is The Hawk's Way, Encounters with Fierce Beauty. She joins us now. Welcome back.
Oh, I'm thrilled to be here, Robin. Thank you for having me.
Well, we have read quite a bit about hawks, Helen MacDonald's exquisite books about hawks. But in your slim volume, I have to say, you just cram so much information in here. Tell us more generally about hawks. You write that looking into their gaze is like looking into the sun, but I'm thinking it's also like looking into an eclipse without protection because, you know, one false move and, you know, there could go an eyeball.
Yeah, well, my husband said that tending a hawk to him seemed like tending a loaded gun and you just don't know when it might go off. But that was part of the excitement of getting to know someone like this who was so unlike any other animal that I had worked with.
Well, and it's in a way dignified too, because it's an arena in which the human, the handler, is subjugated to the animal world.
Yes, and that's awfully nice for a change when you consider that so many of our relationships with animals, at least in our own heads, we conceive of ourselves somehow as either the parent, we talk about, you know, having fur babies at home, or we think that we are dominant, but you won't get anywhere with a hawk with that attitude.
Yeah. And we should say that you were really well instructed by the late handler, Nancy Cowan, who's since passed. And in one of your early training sessions with her, she's dripping blood from her face. What happened?
Well, pretty much 5 minutes into the first lesson that I had, and I was the first student, me and my friend Celinda Chicoin were her first students. And she handed me this gorgeous, huge Harris hawk, who she warned me was feisty. She handed Celinda a Lanner falcon, which is the kind seen on Egyptian hieroglyphics, and she held Banshee, the peregrine, who within 5 minutes of our setting out with these birds of prey, reached up and bit her in the face. And Nancy was dripping blood onto the street. But Nancy wasn't bothered at all by this. She has been bitten. She has been taloned. But it sure drove home to me that this was a bloody sport.
Right. Well, and by the way, you say the sport is falconry, but it's also hunting with the falcons.
Yes.
This is a very focused animal, and you're there to help that animal hunt.
Exactly. I mean, hawks have free will, as we have free will, but just like our free will, theirs is prescribed by certain boundaries, and they have to hunt. They aren't hunting because it's fun, although it is fun for them. They must kill what they eat with their feet. There's absolutely no menace or evil or anger in their ferocity. It's this pure wildness. It was a kind of perfection as opposed to a kind of evil or nastiness. And I was absolutely dazzled by their wildness.
This takes time, this training that you're doing. What was it like the first time a hawk, and I think it was Jazz,
yes,
comes back to your glove?
All birds are made of air. They're very light. But when someone is flying as fast as a hawk can fly, when it lands on your glove, it goes smack. Mm. It lands hard, and the yellow feet squeeze your hand. You can feel it through the glove. You feel the power of that creature through the glove, and you look into those eyes, which are gathering so much of life, so much more than our lives gather. And you are in the presence of something so great that you're just hungry for more. You're hungry to serve someone like that.
That they have given you a great gift of allowing you to receive them. And we should say that what ends up happening after a lot of training is that handlers go out with the hawks, who then fly up and are flying along watching the human handlers on the ground as they all kind of go along together. Sometimes there's a dog to flush out things like pheasants, you know, or quail. And it's this teamwork that starts to happen between the dog, if there is a dog, and the bird and the human. As you're walking along and you realize that this, I mean, who doesn't love seeing a hawk? But as you realize that hawk is flying with me as we go and they are looking for their prey, is there ever a fear of, oh my gosh, they're not going to come back? I'm going to lose this hawk.
Oh yes, hawks fly away forever, all the time. And there's another even worse fear. Your hawk could be killed by another hawk. Mm-hmm. Every time they hunt, they could lose their lives.
If that were to happen, you'd have to let that play out.
Yeah, because there's not a thing you can do. Nancy Cowan, my falconry instructor, lost a bird who she loved very much, who she had raised from a chick named Witch. Witch got up in a tree, you know, they were hunting together, and a red tail was above her. And whichever hawk is above has the advantage. And Witch was a youngster. And Nancy tried to urge her to fly down to her glove, but because, you know, the wisdom of the ancestors that they know in their genes that whichever hawk is the highest has the advantage, Witch wouldn't come down and flew away. And Nancy tried to catch up with her and ended up flagging down a logging truck to try to get to where Witch was faster. But when she got to the tree where she hoped to find Witch, she instead found the red tail looking much fatter than before. She was eaten by another hawk.
Well, I tell you, I thought I was going to go, you can pay, you know, to go to places here in New England, probably elsewhere, where you can be with a hawk for a day and a half. And after reading this, I realized I'm not a candidate because I would anthropomorphize it. I want to find the love they have for me. That's not this relationship. You talk about this being pure agape.
Yeah, the love that you have for a hawk, I think, is different from the love that you encounter anywhere else. And it's a kind of a purifying fire. Even with the octopuses that I have known, I can share gentle touch and they will enjoy this. A hawk doesn't want you to touch it. A hawk doesn't want your affection and won't feel affection as we know it for you. But with your relationship with a hawk, just being in the presence of a hawk is enough. And I realized the four kinds of love that the ancient Greeks identified: eros, our erotic love for our spouse or partner, storge, the love that you feel for parents and for children, philios, that gives us words like philanthropy that we have with our neighbors and friends. These are all kind of transactional because we expect something in return. But with a hawk, what you get in return is to serve them, to be with them, simply to be with them. And that is a pure, non-transactional love, similar, I think, to the love that we are supposed to have for God and that God is said to have for us.
Wow. As you write, a love untainted by expectations. And this is what a hawk can teach you, how to love like a god. Naturalist and author Cy Montgomery, her book is The Hawk's Way, Encounters with Fierce Beauty. Cy Montgomery, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Robin. The pleasure was mine.